relevant to our region, so.
We have a coach tag the other day to the Historical Society, and I was talking about the creek.
I know, I've seen it on East Bay Park.
All righty, so we're back on. We have, all right, we have our handout here, and we'll move on to item nine, please.
Item nine is consideration of adoption of a mitigated negative deck declaration for conditional waiver of waste discharge requirements for grazing activities. Item 10 is the actual consideration of a resolution to adopt the waiver. These items are joined together, but we do have to vote on them separately. Nonetheless, I'd like Rico Duazo to make the presentation, a single presentation, to address both items.
So we're going to hear all the presentation first, and then when
correct.
We vote, we'll do nine.
And then we'll vote separately.
All right. Good morning, board members. My name is Rico Duazo, and I'm an engineer in the Planning and TMDL Division, and I have taken oath. The item before you is a resolution to adopt a conditional waiver of waste discharge requirements for grazing operations in the Knapp River and Sonoma Creek watersheds, which I'll refer to as the conditional waiver for the rest of the presentation. Before I continue, I'd like to acknowledge the work of my coworkers who helped make this conditional waiver possible. First, Carmen Fulis, whose earlier work in Tomales Bay was a springboard for the conditional waiver before you. Also, there was Sandy Potter, who helped make sure our CEQA requirements were met, and Jim Ponton, who helped coordinate all our efforts. I'll first start off with giving you a little bit of background, including the regulatory drivers that prompted the conditional waiver. Also, I'll touch on an earlier conditional waiver that was adopted for Tomales Bay. Then I'll go over our waiver development strategy and give you a recap of the waiver requirements. I'll summarize our outreach efforts and give you some highlights of some comments that we received. And finally, I'll discuss our responses to these comments, including changes to the conditional waiver. This is a combined map of both watersheds, which are delineated by the black lines. The two watersheds are located in the northern portion of our region. The Napa River watershed on the right covers about 426 square miles, and the Sonoma Creek watershed is on the left is smaller, covering about 166 square miles. Both the Napa River and Sonoma Creek flow into northern San Pablo Bay. The land use of concern for the conditional waiver is shown here in yellow, which is namely the rangelands. The conditional waiver addresses these four TMDLs that were adopted by the board between June 2006 and September 2009. Each TMDL has identified grazing operations as a pollutant source that needs further control and implementation measures. The TMDLs also acknowledge that conditional waivers are an appropriate tool as a means of regulating grazing. The grazing waiver approach has been used before with the adoption of the Tomales Bay Conditional Grazing Waiver in July 2008 to address the pathogen TMDL. As you heard in last June's board meeting, our results were very good. 95% of eligible parcels have enrolled with a notice of intent, and we had a 97% annual report submittal rate last winter. Also, since the Tomales Bay waiver was adopted, over $2 million in grants have been awarded towards the watershed to help implement the waiver. This is the general strategy that we try to use for Napa and Sonoma. When we were developing this conditional waiver, we tried to be as efficient as possible and not have to reinvent the wheel. Our goal was to continue the successes of the Tomales Bay effort and bring them into the Napa River and Sonoma Creek watersheds. Many of the concerns and solutions from Tomales Bay are transferable for Napa and Sonoma ranchers. We're also continuously trying to make our waivers better. So we've made some changes in the conditional waiver to make the language clearer and to define some actions that were previously implied. The conditional waiver applies to those ranchers that cover 100 acres or more. Most of the ranchers in both the watersheds tend to be large, averaging about 150 acres. So we expect to enroll the majority of the ranchers in both watersheds, which is about 50 in total. Smaller ranchers, less than 100 acres, are still expected to maintain good management practices, and they may be brought under the conditional waiver on a case-by-case basis if necessary. To comply with the conditional waiver, ranchers must first submit a notice of intent by November 15th of this year. Ranchers then have another year, by November 15th of 2012, to prepare their ranch plan. During that year and after, ranchers must implement their management practices and comply with the conditions of the waiver. And the first annual report is also due next year, November 15th, 2012. Here's a quick overview of the elements of the conditional waiver. The ranch plan is like the rancher's workbook. It describes what should be happening at the ranch. Compliance monitoring is required to make sure that the ranch plan is being followed, and the annual report is how the ranchers tell us that they are in compliance. Ranchers who do not comply with the condition of the waivers will be subject to enforcement actions and or their own individual permit. Under CEQA, the board is required to consider the environmental impacts associated with discretionary projects it approves, like the conditional waiver. A mitigated negative declaration has been prepared, and it concludes that the conditional waiver will not have significant impact on the environment with mitigation. The board has to adopt the mitigated negative declaration in order to adopt the conditional waiver. Our outreach efforts began with a technical advisory group. We met in late 2009 and early 2010. Many of the members were also involved with the Tamales Bay effort, so they were already familiar with the concept of a conditional waiver. One of the main messages we tried to convey was that we would closely follow the Tamales Bay approach and to maintain continuity and consistency in our region. We received no major comments because most of the issues were already worked out, but we did get some good recommendations specific to Napa and Sonoma counties. In mid-2010, we made presentations to the North Bay Watershed Association Council and the Napa Watershed Information Center and Conservancy Board meetings to get the word out to their constituents. We also submitted an article to the Sonoma Farm Bureau newsletter. We held two public meetings in Sonoma this year. The first one was in January, where we held a CEQA scoping meeting and a public workshop to present the details of the conditional waiver. In July, during the comment period for the initial study, mitigated negative declaration, and draft conditional waiver, we held another public meeting to be available to personally answer any questions and to solicit written comments. After the comment period, we received two letters cited for CEQA, but they were also pertinent to the conditional waiver. One comment we heard at both public meetings is the burden on the ranchers, both regulatory and financial. This issue was also raised to the Tamales Bay waiver. We addressed it back then, but it's an important topic, and it bears revisiting. Written comments received include concerns about overgrazing and public access to documents. And I'll go over our responses to comments in the next slides. We feel that the conditional waiver provides an even balance between actions mandated by law and board-adopted TMDLs and the needs of the ranchers. The conditional waiver is structured so that the paperwork to be submitted is simple, just a two-page notice of intent and a one-page annual report. The rancher has flexibility for the contents of his ranch plan. We recognize that the rancher can best decide what works on his ranch and how to allocate his resources. Also, the rancher is not on his own. There are federal and state agencies and also industry groups that are available to help the rancher through the process. There are no fees associated with this conditional waiver. No fees for submitting a notice of intent, no fees for administrative work, and no fees for our inspections. What's important is that the conditional waiver evens the playing field because it removes the economical advantage for so-called bad actors who either take shortcuts or maximize production over proper land management. In the end, the conditional waiver will help us focus our efforts on ranchers that need the extra help. To address the comments regarding overgrazing, we've added some new language to the ranch plan that I'll go over in the next slide. As I mentioned before, the ranch plan is like a workbook for the rancher. It describes how the rancher plans to run his operations and any plans for improvement. It's not a static document, so it's subject to changes and updates. The ranch plans are not submitted but kept on site and are available for review during inspections. We are not requiring submittal of the ranch plans because they are by nature a workbook, and we're not interested in micromanaging how the rancher manages their land to protect water quality. What we are interested in is compliance, which we will measure by documented site inspections and the review of the annual reports, all of which are available to the public. If for some reason we do ask for the ranch plans to be submitted, it will be part of our record and subject to public inspection. But otherwise, ranch plans are a tool to be kept on site and revised as necessary. We made two main changes to the conditional waiver. The first one is to introduce residual dry matter measurements into the ranch plan to address concerns about overgrazing. Residual dry matter is a standard way of measuring the remaining amount of vegetation at the end of the grazing season. The method involves taking out a standard plot of land, about 1 square foot, and clipping the remaining vegetation as much as possible without disturbing the soil. The material collected is then weighed, and the results are compared to recommended guidelines. Properly managed, adequate residual dry matter can provide a high degree of protection against soil erosion and nutrient losses. Our second change was to add mitigation requirements as part of the conditions to be consistent with the findings of the mitigated negative declaration. Measures include proper management practices during construction activities and also obtaining permits as necessary, such as 401 certification when working in creeks. After adoption of the condition waiver, we'll coordinate our efforts in all three watersheds, Tamales Bay, Napa, and Sonoma, into one coherent program so they can use our staff resources as efficiently as possible. Dairies are currently exempt from the conditional grazing waiver, so we will want to incorporate grazing requirements into any future permits. We'll try to get a third-party program established and try to get as much grant money as possible to help implement the conditional waiver. The board has two resolutions for consideration at this meeting. The first resolution adopts the mitigated negative declaration, and the second resolution adopts the conditional waiver. And we recommend adoption of both resolutions. And that's the end of my presentations, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions of staff? Just make a brief comment. I think it's a, if we look at agriculture and history in the past and what ranchers and farmers always believed in, they were doing the right things and we don't need to change. And that was really hard and we didn't really know any better of what the impacts were of our operations. And if you look at history, just in the Bay Area here in the 50s, you wanted to build a dairy near a waterway, and you wanted to just get as much use out of it because you could discharge right into the creek. And that was, we just did that because nobody knew any better. And so as we've evolved, and as you've evolved with the patience of this waiver thing with landowners, whether you want to be agriculture or farmer, whatever you want to call it, a rancher or farmer, it's taken time to get here, but at least I think you've given everyone a fair shot at getting to the next step. None of us are perfect. I mean, it's just the way it is when you live on the land. But I think we've all come a long way, and I appreciate staff's patience in this, without a doubt, because everyone and their beliefs of their private property rights and, leave me alone mentality are changing, except there's a few jerks out there. Got one neighbor, exactly. And you had one in the city. I got one in the country. You know what I mean? So I won't name names, but it's just amazing. And great grandpa's always says there's takers and there's givers in society, and so you're going to hopefully get a lot of givers that have stepped up here when you're talking 95 or 97%, but there's still some takers out there, and As Ida will always say, hopefully their day will come, but you know, in the meantime, you suffer through these things. So I wanted to just comment that we've come a long way, and it's taken time, and I'm hoping in this fee issue, everyone's complaining about fees and money, and Tam's working on this fee thing daily, I'm sure, with the way the economy is, but you do have to pay for some things down the road, and you know, it doesn't cost, it pays that we do the right thing. So this is just some of my comments on that, and I know how hard staff's worked on to get these to this level with the outreach and meeting with people, and I don't know if anyone from the ag community is here today. It's unfortunate because these are huge steps in the right direction that they could have been here. So kind of I'll try to represent them the best
I think in this case we did such a great job of going out to them that
yeah, maybe they didn't feel
they thought we'd bring the meeting
show
to
up
them.
But yeah. But you know, as we talked about when we talked about Tamales and Western Marin and all that, and I mean, really and truly, these are the wonders of the world for our agricultural communities. And this particular part of the world, they've been fairly successful financially, too. So, I mean, they don't really have much to bellyache about, even if we did charge some fees. Because if you look at the mega mansions and the beautiful properties they built up on, they weren't normally farmers. It's always easy to be a farmer when you have other income, but you know, they've done a good job, you guys have done a good job, and I don't mean to be preaching here, I know it's getting on with the morning, but I think it's a great beginning, and I thank all of you for getting us to this level. Yes, Vice Chair.
Well, I had a few questions, and Bruce gave me a few answers on this piece of paper. So, but for the benefit of the other board members, I was interested to find out how many parcels there were and what the workload was going to be. And we heard that there were about 50 parcels. And I was interested to find out how we are going to go about identifying or targeting the parcels with the biggest problems, because our objective here is not to just make everybody's life miserable. We want to identify the less than perfect ranches, bring them up to standard, and really go have a very light tread on the folks who don't have a problem. So the answer that I was discussing with Bruce last night to that question was that you folks are going to go out in the field and identify the folks that you think are the ones that really need to be brought up to snuff. Where do you start? I mean, you get in the car. Can we tell from our watershed monitoring records where the worst parcels are, or do we have to hear it word of mouth through the people who don't want to admit that they're telling us? Like NRCS and the RCDs, or I mean, how are we doing this?
We have been talking with the local agencies, and they've actually mentioned a couple of places that we should be looking at. So after the conditional waiver does get adopted, that'll be the first places that we go to and make sure that they're doing the right thing. So there's a couple that we already have in mind to start with.
Okay. Well, it's good to know we're getting the... Yes, sorry.
I'll add to that a little bit. We have been collecting nutrient data, and we have some ideas about areas where the nutrient problems may be worse than others. So those are other areas that we'll be looking in. In addition, we always step back and look at the resource, you know, where we have spawning areas, where we have critical habitat areas. So I think the other part of the focus will be based on the sensitivity of the receiving water body, which is also critical in our thinking, because we're going to want to see compliance sooner than later in those more critical areas.
Good point. That is very important. Okay, moving on. I had asked about the status of the third-party programs, and I guess, you know, we're trying is the answer, and the fish-friendly farming is one that, you know, hopefully we'll be able to convince everyone that even though it started in their in another appellation, that the folks will see that it's a good thing. So I don't want to belabor that point, except that I'm hoping that ultimately we can have other third party programs, not just the fish friendly farming, but maybe something that would come out of the California Rangeland Trust or one of the other ranching organizations. I think it might have a lot of benefits. Moving on, I had also asked whether there were templates that were not in the permit that we're seeing, but that would be available to the ranchers. And I'm told that there are both ranch plan templates and an annual compliance template that is either in the works or available.
Right, this was developed.
And I have one now.
Well, we need this back.
Oh, shoot, I wanted to take it home for my place.
I'm Jim Ponton, and I took the oath. And this is an example of what was put together by UC Cooperative Extension for Tamales. And with just a little bit of editing, we should be able to apply it to these watersheds as well. So it would be programmatic in a sense. And the two points that would be added would be the residual dry matter.
You better get
okay.
That going.
You can have. Oh, I'm okay, but that's generally planned. This is what we're talking about.
Thank you. That's all good stuff. Are we mailing one of those to everybody? We can't possibly.
No.
They can download it off the web.
Mail it to the chair anyway.
Yeah.
Okay, we got you.
To include two changes to include what Rico presented, the residual dry matter measurements and requirements, and then also we'd like to have included in that the CEQA mitigation requirements and monitoring reporting requirements that are part of the permit now as condition, I think, 5. And we'll use probably some contract dollars if necessary to get that amended. For this watershed. Thank you.
That will be very, very helpful. Those were my questions. I have some comments that I might talk about later on when we're ready to vote, but I'll save those for now.
One of my other questions, we're so fortunate at times in the Bay Area with a tremendous amount of property being dedicated to open space and to different districts. And there's a lot of thousands of acres out there that we're enjoying. And I don't know if the nonprofit groups have the capability of trying to keep this up. So we've finally convinced most of them to allow grazing. So would it be the tenant's responsibility then? Did I miss that in here?
The landowner is ultimately responsible, but they can have a agreement between the tenant and themselves who does the ranch plan, and it's between them, but the owner has the responsibility, but either can do it.
It's slowed down a little bit since the sugar mommy and daddies are kind of no more billions, they're just down to millions, but... There still is a lot in the Nine Bay Area County, some wonderful properties out there that are owned by public. So I think that's something we have to be aware of. Any other comments? I'm sorry, Board Member Moore.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. I thought Dr. Young covered a lot of the questions I had. I thought maybe just building on that line of questions, what are some specific examples for the board and you know and the participants here of ranch plan elements? What are some typical ranch plan elements?
If you look behind you, the These are potential management practices that the ranch land can do. Grazing, fencing to keep the cows out of the creek. Filter strip is just a bit of land that they don't graze to, you know, allow infiltration. So these are just typical management practices that you can use.
Member Moore, you're asked, so these are management practices, but the elements mm-hmm. of a ranch plan would be kind of a holistic inventory of the property, of where it's located, the locations of the creeks and riparian areas, the composition of the roads, the layout of the roads, an inclusion of an air photo or some type of topographic mm-hmm. map showing low points, high points, where things drain to. And so basically an inventory of one's site, so that, and then management practices are then installed to prevent either erosion of those roads or to control access of the animals to the creeks mm-hmm. to prepare, preserve and the riparian area. So there's, it's a planning, it's a, we call it a workbook, is the ranch plan, and then these are the tools within that workbook that one would use to control nutrient and sediment and pathogen loading.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's really good, and it builds on Dr. Young's comment about, you know, furnishing templates. And here you've got a menu that's very robust with all kinds of different potential ways to improve water quality. So, thank you for drilling down on that. I think it's worth thinking about and showing how really I think is a fairly user friendly approach. You know, self directed. And, you know, and I would just say, I think I really support this. I think it's a solid regulatory strategy. As you noted, we pioneered it in Tomales Bay. You know, this region is one of the first to ever do a grazing waiver. And we don't have a lot of people in the audience, and that speaks a lot of volumes as to the success of this. I guess I would just, I'm curious what staff's opinion is of the environmental outcome of the Tomales Bay efforts. Have you seen examples of riparian improvements and water quality improvements with our efforts in Tomales Bay?
In last June board meeting, Carmen did give you some examples of how some restoration was done to protect water quality from during, you know, on ranches. So there has been a lot of improvements. And we've gone out, Carmen and I go out regularly during the winter to do inspections. And by and large, most of the ranchers are trying to do the right thing.
So compliance is high, but also the environmental outcome is measurable and noticeable. And I hope that, you know, and I know it does, but I know that's going to feed back into our evaluation of the TMDLs, you know, in our attainment on that track, something that is pretty progressive, you know. It's something to celebrate. Thanks.
So do we want to move on to 10? Can we do that?
Well, our goal was the discussion would address both items, but when you're ready to vote, we should take them in order, because, as you say, you don't have any cards, and our intent was Rico's presentation would address both 9 and 10.
Should we take 10 or 9?
Nine would need to go first.
Board Member McGrath has some.
I just have a brief comment. When I was kind of a brand new board member, I was very struck by a comment that Dr. Young made about extending regulation to people not heretofore regulated, and that it should be done with the lightest possible touch. And I've always kept that as kind of a touchstone as to how we should do things. And I think this achieves that. I think it has that in mind. It has examples, but it's not prescriptive. So it has templates, but they're not prescriptive, so you can deviate from them. But if you want to sort of say there's a cookbook here, you can do that. Pretty clearly, the staff has made it clear that their focus is on areas where the water quality data suggests there's problems. So I think it achieves that. And as the chair has pointed out, we have a vast array of lands, publicly and privately owned, that add to the quality of life, both in terms of open space and in terms of our stream function. we should touch those people lightly. We should appreciate what they do. We should appreciate that as public owners of land, we can't manage it for public use without grazing. So this does find that respectful and minimal footprint, and I like that.
Stop in at Region 3 and Region 5 hearings one of these days. I think we are very fortunate to have the professionalism of everyone involved in this region, and I hear it every time I travel from other regions that they're just hysterical about what's going on, you know, and so I compliment us because I think we're trying to do the right thing. We're not perfect, but at least we're moving forward, and, you know, you get 120 speakers in the room screaming that they're putting them all out of business, and U.S. representatives sending letters saying, how can you do this to the farmers in Salinas Valley? It's a hell of a mess, really and truly. And 2 weeks ago in the morning driving through Salinas Valley, let me tell you, these guys feed the world. I mean, you shut that place down or make it more restrictive, I don't know where in the hell we're going to get vegetables.
Farmer John's.
Yeah. And, you know, that's a whole nother subject because, you know, Ida goes very upset when we're talking these Berkeley home gardeners selling produce, you know, at the park. It just makes us crazy because we're trying to do the right things with restrictions and government and enforcements. And then somebody can raise a chicken in their backyard and sell it on the street. It's like something's wrong with this regulation system, but when the kids walk by at the farmer's market and they're eating organic strawberries and Ida goes, I think you should wash them before you let the kids eat them, or they'll ask us about produce, and I'm getting off subject here. Wash all your produce, very simple. Yeah. Wash all your produce, whether it's organic or not. That doesn't mean it's clear, so I think we've come a long way, and I appreciate that, but again, none of us are perfect, and I think about it, believe it or not, you've all and past chairs and board members have tried to indoctrinate me, but when I pull out on the road sometimes with the tractor and there's a little mud on the tire, I'm like, oh, hell, what am I doing here, you know, so I stay on the shoulder.
Buffer strip.
Yeah, you know, it's not easy because it's hard to change all of us, and so thank you for that. So I think we've had enough of this. Yeah, Vice Chair.
I would like to add to the comments if I could. And yes, Jim is exactly right. I've always been concerned about having a fairly minimal impact on the business practices of people who are doing all the right things already. There's no reason to make them have headaches because of us. But on the other hand, we want to have a program that is effective in cleaning up water quality. I think that there are a lot of good things about what we're proposing to adopt here. Briefly, we know that step one in going into one of these communities where we haven't have a regulatory system before is just locating all the parcels for us and for them, informing all the landowners that there's kind of a new game in town and we have water quality problems and everybody's going to have to join the program. That's a huge hurdle that this empty room speaks worlds about, because I think you folks have done a really nice job of starting to make that happen without having the negative repercussions that have happened in many of the other regions that we know about. The checklists that you got in here are simple and they're clear and they really get to the point. The residual dry matter measurements, I think, were really key. It's a huge improvement and a really good addition because it's the one place I could find where there was something objectively measurable that came out with a number and you'd know, yes, it's good, or no, it's not good. And I think what we're asking for overall is fairly reasonable. It's really the standard of practice in grazing management right now. And the fact that I'm so glad you brought up in the presentation that one of the things we will have accomplished is to level the playing field and no longer be providing an economic advantage to people who are using their land in a way that harms water quality. And that's really important. The approach that we're using is one that has been used in the past, as you all know. We've got basically do a self-assessment, use appropriate BMPs, and organize all of this stuff into an appropriate management plan. This is an approach that NRCS has been using for decades, and one that generally the rangeland managers accept as being a good practice. But we are moving it into a regulatory scheme, and that creates some challenges, I think. And among the challenges are that we, in providing the flexibility that we're trying to provide, we're also being very non-specific about some things that might be confusing to people. And I can remember in the PCB's TMDL, where we had hordes of people from the discharger community coming in and saying this is, and assuming the worst from their perspective, because we weren't very precise in what we were going to do. And on the other hand, we had a lot of people from the environmental community assuming the worst from their perspective on the other side, thinking that we were going to be overly lenient. And I called it awfulizing, on both sides. And I think that we do fall into the trap here of allowing people to awfulize because we are so nonspecific. And there were some comments that I saw that the ranchers had made about, we just need more clarity on what it is that you're requiring. Because, if I'm a rancher and I'm sitting here reading these requirements, even with a notebook, or I'm an environmentalist wanting to get the water quality cleaned up, there's a lot that's left to interpretation. All of the NRCS practices are written to be very much adaptable to site-specific locations. That's great for a voluntary program, but it's really hard for people to know, am I in compliance or not? I've got a head cut. It's eroding. It's not eroding very much. What do I have to do? What kind of money am I going to have to spend? There's just not enough specificity for it to ease everyone's comfort level here. And it will be our challenge in the implementation to make sure that there are sufficient examples that word of mouth gets around. But I do think that's maybe not it's not ideal. It's the lack of specificity, and from that perspective, is less than ideal. So if we can go towards more measurable and objective criteria like the residual dry matter, if we can find other elements like that, I think it would be a great improvement. Okay, that's number one. Number two, I would love to see us move towards a system where we could have an off-ramp from some of the reporting for people who consistently, year after year, have ranch management that we would hold up as being an icon of the right way to do things. Let's somehow ease their burden from being in the program, and I'll leave it to you to figure out how that, might be implemented. But good actors, we want to, we want to give them something in return, and maybe it's less reporting, maybe it's something else, but I will leave that to you. The third thing I would like very much to see, ultimately, is an alternative compliance route. I would love to see a way that ranches in certain areas could say, look, you can look upstream from my property, you can look downstream from my property, or three neighbors get together and say, you can look upstream, you can look downstream. We are not contributing to a water quality problem here. You know, we are already within the TMDL guidelines, and you can prove it by just looking at the water quality. You don't have to come in and look at my ranch plan. That's easier for us. That's easier for them. We're not in the middle of their business. I would really like to, for us to try to find areas like that where we could do compliance by looking at water quality. So I think that's my soapbox for the day. Thank you very much. I will look forward to maybe working with staff in some more detail so I can come up to speed on what you're doing on vineyards as well, because that's going to have some very similar issues. Bottom line, good work. We need to get this started. This is the template that we have to work with. My comments were directed towards trying to make the good into the perfect.
Gonna have to get the vice chair a farmer ball hat, man. Get her a ball cap.
I already have a Farmer John apron.
Oh, that's right. Yes. Well, you know, the last Muellerism working here apron. When we're talking working about this here, and then we'll move on. But, you know, in the good old days in the 50s and the 60s, there used to be field days, and you had farm advisors, and you had NRCS or Soil Conservation Service. Those days are getting pretty limited. Actually, I have a couple programs from the 50s, and I should share them with you. One was about water quality issues in 1956, and I always love to read that paragraph, and they go, look at the date, 1956. We don't have those anymore. I mean, everyone's budget cuts, and you try to get NRCS out. Some districts still have them, and RCD, but it's a tough one. But one of the field days that we had, and, you know, as a kid, you wanted to drive tractor, really and truly, and Mayrose Betancourt still ran a couple teams of horses, you know, and I never forget, I just remembered it, all this grazing and what residuals on the ground. Mayrose used to say, you boys, he says, where the horse goes, the oats grow. Where the caterpillar goes, the oats don't grow. So I always remember that. So we have to be careful what we're looking for in some of this residual matter out there. It does do some good.
Ambiguous term there, goes.
I think he clarified it where the caterpillar dripped the oil. He says, where the caterpillar make the oil, the grass don't grow. So where the horse grows, it goes. So I have a few more in the back of my hat if I'm around any longer, so we'll save those for another day. But I think we've had enough on this, and you guys are wonderful. It's a good start, as the vice chair says. And I think we're being very generous to all of us in agriculture, and I would hope someday Ag would invite someone like Dr. Young to get up and make a presentation and realize how hard we work to get this going. So we got to start with number 9.
Right. With that, I'd recommend adoption of the tentative resolution in item number 9, which would adopt the mitigated negative declaration.
I move adoption.
For adoption.
Second.
Moved and second. Roll call vote, please, Mary.
Aye.
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 Aye. So ordered in number 10?
Yes, I'd recommend adoption of the tentative resolution in item 10, which would adopt the conditional waiver.
I moved to adopt it.
Been moved and second. Another roll call vote, please, Mary. So we're on the record here doing the good things.
Aye.
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 I always like a roll call vote because it shows your spouse you were really at the meeting.
And in case you haven't looked at the website recently, these are all recorded and you can listen to it on your computer if you really want to relive the glory.
So
this was glory?
Yeah.
Some days it is. So Costco Busan, I don't know.
We do have a brief closed session. Chris Kerrigan of the Office of Enforcement is here to discuss that with us, but it is a closed session, so we should
clear the room. So thank you.
Otherwise, clear the room. It may not be tough to do so, but we'll turn the microphones off.
I've been to those ag